Yeah, check the flow, the low. Pixel push it, that's the code. Got that flame of glow, walking slow, where the green things grow. Wireframes, my escape. Use a journey, landscape. Pixel push it, long stride.
Design so fly. It's good, we're in the booths. My jungle is gone for this week. Change the air quality is...
On the other side of this wall.
Yeah. Stuck with this stale air rather than my luxurious plant air for our apartment.
Luxurious.
Yeah. How about you? How's it being back?
Most Italy. It is good. It's taken a long time to just recover from vacation with two kids, babies. So starting to feel like I'm getting back into the swing of things now. But yeah, I feel like it took me like a week.
Well, takes its toll. I'm surprised you didn't get sick. That's like number one thing these days.
Travel is so hard with kids.
Yeah.
Like I could easily just stop traveling for 5 years and then pick it up again. Or like just do like local, really local stuff and just avoid international flights.
Yeah, but then you're like, you're doing road trips, you're driving, you're like,
yeah, no, there's no way I do that.
At the wheel. You gotta wait till your kids are like of driving age so they can do the driving.
I will, when they're of driving age, I will quit driving.
Yeah, that's your insurance policy. They're gonna be the homemakers. That's the idea, right?
All right, what have we want to tackle? What's new? What's on your mind? I've got something very interesting.
A walking trend.
But yeah, the walking trend is amazing.
My God. You told me about it, and then now I've not, like, I can't stop unseeing it. Lisa this weekend was, just giving me updates. Like, this group walked from Oakville to Toronto. This group walked from here to here. And I'm just like, as someone who hates walking, like, just, it's crazy to me. I could imagine running it, cycling it, like, anything but walking. And it's just hilarious to me because it seems so mind-numbing and kind of aligned with the whole like raw dogging of flights.
It's the ultimate suffer fest.
Yeah, it's pure suffering. Like everyone's looking for new ways to show feats of mental fortitude right now.
Yeah, it's become a thing, right? Like I feel like it used to be really rare that you would see someone doing something like, I'm gonna row the English Channel or something like that. And now it's like, I don't know, I'm really into that stuff, so I know I send you a lot of people doing these things, but it's like people are like biking across the world, walking across the world, walking across the desert, biking across the, or like canoeing across the ocean. And then on the micro scale, it's like in Toronto, there's like this trend we've been seeing and following. And people are just like posting these insane walks that they're doing on Reddit, and filming it, posting all the stats, and it's awesome. I love it.
I can get behind everything but walking.
Shout out to all the ultra walkers out there on Toronto Reddit. You need your own Reddit thread so that we could just like live vicariously through all these insane walkers.
Exactly. I want to know what they're listening to. Like, is it Harry Potter or is it nothing? It's the ultimate test.
So, yeah, it's the best.
Yeah, it's interesting as an observer for sure.
But I feel like... Jumping into things, I listened to something really interesting, and I feel like all the news lately is anger related. I guess it's partly because it's just so much happening, and like it's hard to avoid talking about it. Some of it's really cool. A lot of it's really cool. A lot of it is just recycling of old themes and workflows and things.
All
so
the same stuff.
I thought this was really cool because we talked about how AI projects are failing in organizations. Like, I forget what the percentage was, but it's pretty high.
95.
Yeah. So
that's a bunk stat.
It doesn't make sense at all. There's a lot more, I think, nuance to that than what's in that. They are generally not returning, I think. And they are a lot more complicated to actually do and do well than people think they are. You know, like people think like, just implementing an AI workflow is going to revolutionize something within your organization. But like you have said previously, a lot harder than people think. to truly integrate into your systems and applications than to have like an external workflow running on something AI based. OpenAI.
Yeah.
I forget who it was. Oh, I wish I remembered now who was actually doing the presentation, but I was watching it. One of the executives at OpenAI, chief revenue officer or something like that. So they just created a new role that's really interesting because it's like, to me, kind of like blends design and design principles and engineering. And it's called the, what they're calling an FDE, which is a forward deployed engineer. So these are engineers. I mean, the title is forward deployed engineer. It doesn't sound like they're actually engineers. It just sounds like that's the title. But basically the goal is, they hire these, they're actually like hiring like crazy for this role. And the role is you are deployed on client site, you embed within large enterprise clients, and you basically, your job is to help accelerate AI projects into full scale deployment within as on site consultant.
That's interesting and funny because it sounds like old world sales. Like, you'd have these sort of solutions people, like they would sell into a business, and then to make sure that that implementation was successful, you have someone on site.
Yeah, consultant. Yeah.
Plugging things in, setting up the servers, like a very tangible role. Like, it's nothing new, but it's hilarious to hear that OpenAI is doing this.
The thing that's new about it, I think, is that like, it's a little bit more complex because you're kind of going into an open sandbox, right? Like, your role is to understand. So like, this is where I see like the design research part coming into it, is like, your job is to do the research and to live and breathe within this organization to understand how to even present something from proof of concept all the way to a scalable system.
Yeah.
They're not doing it internally. You're placed there to do that. And their compensation is a mix of like a very high base, but also there's some variable comp there based probably on sales. But they are technical staff, so I'm not sure if they're full-scale engineers, but they're it's a technical role because you need to be able to scale AI technically within these organizations. And so their job is basically, it's kind of like similar model to just like the traditional consulting model, like, you know, Deloitte or Accenture or any of those companies are trying to solve a really hard problem within a large organization. So their consultants go on site for like years sometimes, right? Like, they work within the organization that they're hired. But then it's also really interesting because it's, you're trying to basically scale AI projects within these organizations. So it's kind of an interesting, it's a bit of an old, like, again,
totally
recycled,
it's very, it's so
recycled
legacy
role, but there's also like some interesting nuances to it that are fairly new.
Great. I can see the strategy. It's like, it's very much like Deloitte, like the consulting roles that would come in, like you said, and like live and breathe the organization, or even the design consulting that IDEO would do, like the experience of like on the ground, working with these people, side-by-side analysis, finding the opportunities and the pain points, all to sell them into your ecosystem that uses AI and your product.
They are technical staffs.
I think you'd have to be semi-technical.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because you're also basically managing a product. Like, you're almost like a remote product.
I feel like you're a solutions architect
developer
that is certified in OpenAI tech.
Yeah. But you're also managing the success of these projects. So you are helping the clients to tweak and customize whatever this solution is. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very cool. But I think I have a question about that. Like, from your perspective, do you think that this is maybe a reaction to something like that MIT article? Because
I just think it's hard, right? Like, they're not seeing success fast enough, so they've come up with a model that is going to help them to bridge that gap because
scale their own business.
Like, companies, you know, it's, first of all, it's like I said, it's more difficult than organizations think. They're busy. everyone's really busy. No one has dedicated time to do this work. So I guess if you're paying enough money to OpenAI, they'll just embed someone to help grow the account, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a sales engineer, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, solutions architect.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Think what is design and design research is always so undervalued. Like, I don't think, because they're engineers or technical resources, I don't think they are trained in doing the sort of like user research and sprints that designers would do. So they're, it's kind of like we've talked about in the past how design, some of development and like technical resourcing is going under the design umbrella. But then when it comes to AI, they're still not really leaning much on design. They're actually just pulling some of the what would be like design capabilities under the technical resource umbrella. So it's the opposite of what's happening everywhere else. Yeah, because it's still so engineering led, right?
Yeah. It's like a constant push and pull between like, is a developer, like, do they have design qualities or does the designer have developer qualities or like,
yeah, it's so
semi-technical? But I think we're, because we kind of passed the heyday back when IDEO first established the whole idea of design thinking, which is, it's not a dirty word, but it's definitely like fallen out of favor now. And It was really innovative at the time because they said, if you value design and design thinking, then this can completely reorganize and reinvent your business and your products and your team and how you work. And it was all about taking that ethnographic lens of design, where you sit a designer next to a business person, next to an engineer, and they observe, they document, or you put a designer in a hospital bed to document the patient experience. It was all about collecting hands-on experience that you then formulate through business engineering into an outcome. And that was brilliant. But somewhere along the way, it's just like, it definitely fell out of favor. And you're right. I don't think people do value design thinking or just the sheer depth and breadth of what design can do within a business. I think that we're still locked into this idea that it is pixel pushing and that's all it is. It's not that we can design a system or that we can design a method. And I keep saying design is the operating system. You can design a process. You're still a designer, right? Whether it's tangible or not, whether it's pixels on a screen or not, it's still design. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because it's, I think it changes the design landscape a little bit. I think it also becomes a whole other channel for user input into products and design and into design. So, but then also, like, I wonder, are they technical? And I have no idea what the requirements are for the job in terms of like the technical requirements for someone. But I suspect that probably they're probably not following a lot of UX or design frameworks for like the early research stage. So it's just super interesting because it's kind of like you're doing a lot of like product development, design and development internally with a client. So your job would be to find out like where you would even focus on a proof of concept. Like, why do this project? What's the need? Who are the users? And then start to roll it out into like some sort of, and then have to support it while you're continuing to expand AI workflows and products within an enterprise client. It's so cool.
Yeah. There's a few things that I'm wondering about with this. My first big assumption is that it's probably more of a technical role than a design role. And I think that's problematic.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Because 100%. I think a lot of these implementations, what they do suffer from is being overly technical and overly business leaning, whereas we really need to get more at the ground level and just observe and interact and apply that design research methodology. And that's what that MIT paper was essentially saying, that 95% of the enterprise projects fail. Like, the ones that have been thought out like on a large scale are failing, but they're seeing a lot more traction at the grassroots level, where just an individual like yourself sits down and says, what can AI do for me to help me on this task? And slowly you build and build and build on that. And before you know it, you're saving yourself like 3 hours a day on a task. And that's the stuff that you have to be looking at.
Mm.
And so the follow-up to that is, if they're thinking sending this individual into an organization is going to really change that, then I would worry that they're looking a little bit too broadly at the organization, and they're not taking that more grassroots, like working group approach, where it's like, hey, let's talk to the production team, and we're going to send a production team solutions consultant in here to do a design research thing and figure out what their issues are. And then we're going to go talk to the revenue team and see what they're doing. It's like not one individual is going to be able to do this.
Well, I think it's crazy. They say it's enterprise. I pulled up some job descriptions because I was actually curious, because I wasn't 100% sure. There's not many people that are, like, this is a brand new role that's been created. There's only really two or three companies that are have created FDE roles. One's OpenAI, one's Palantir. And both of them require software engineering skills. So you need to be a strong software engineering skills.
Nah, I completely disagree with that. That's crazy. Oh,
I mean, the engineering pool in the Valley is a lot broader, but as a total general stereotype, I think that it would be very difficult to find someone who is an engineer and also balances all these other soft skills that are required to be a consultant or a design consultant, just based on our experience working in this space. It seems to be quite rare. So
I would, if
really
I were to design that program, I would have it as a dual role where, like, not a dual role, but sort of a co-analysis role where you get the engineer, you pair the engineer with the design thinking role. And they work together. They, you know, one observes, both observe, one facilitates. Having that tightly coupled relationship with like co-analysis and co-design between engineering and design, I think that's where you would probably start seeing a lot more successes. But
yeah, they're also junior roles. They're also junior roles because they're hiring people that, like, Palantir is like, their requirement is 1+ years of relevant post-college work experience. 1+, minimum 1 year.
So you and I could probably apply.
I mean, yeah, probably. But some other interesting requirements. So embed deeply with customers, understand their problems, scope solutions, sequence work, and ship full stack systems. One person.
No.
And you have to do that on probably multiple projects. I guess depending on the size and scope of the organization, how long you've been placed there or something. Codify patterns, build playbooks, and surface field signals to inform the core platform roadmap. Super interesting.
It honestly feels like grasping at straws. It might just
idea is good. It might just be the first iteration. And maybe it works. Who knows? You know, like, there's a much wider talent pool in that area. So, I mean, it could work. It does seem like it's a lot for one person to be able to achieve this.
Yeah.
And like, it seems like they would be capped. But maybe you put multiple FDEs in really big companies that are moving faster, right? Who knows?
Maybe. I definitely think it is a response to these corporations, these organizations.
Yeah, for sure.
Bringing it in, thinking they can do it on their own, not getting any traction. So then they're having second thoughts about AI in general. They're like, well, it's too hard. It's too complex. It's not doing it. It's not the magic that we were promised. So I think they're trying to like walk back from that decision and the commitment. And OpenAI is like, well, no. Like, don't worry. It's not you. It's so new. We're going to help you through it. So it's probably a reaction to that, but it could also just be that maybe they are reaching a level of business maturity where they're saying, well, how can we start scaling within organizations? Capture the organizations, like, they fastest growing app on the planet, right? they still hold that spot. And then what's next? Well, to grow within pre-existing accounts. So
yeah, totally. I think it does make sense too. Like it requires, I mean, if you're doing it at scale and you're a big enough organization, and you're spending a lot of money on them, like you kind of want success, and you're not going to also hire dedicated, I mean, maybe in some instances they do, but hiring dedicated resources to focus on this is just, I think a difficult thing to manage if you've never done it before. And a lot of people haven't because it's brand new. So it makes sense to just, you know, become a consulting company powered by AI technology.
Are we adding AI services to our company now?
Yeah.
No, it's a great, great topic. And you know, yeah, we can't, it's inescapable to talk about this stuff. Like, ever since I stopped posting about AI, my engagement has plummeted. So that's the spirit of the time. But my health has been better not posting about it, to be honest. There's been a positive upswing.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it's just like constant design and technology related news that's coming out of things that are happening in the AI space, and it's awesome. You know, a lot of the stuff's going to end up getting adopted by other tech companies too, the way that they work. Yeah. I mean, like, there's no reason why the consultants, you know, most of the big consultants have technology companies that they've bought to help support their consulting. There's no reason why they can't kind of copy this FDE approach too, with their like clients that they can really grow within. It's a good model in theory.
In theory. Yeah. Well, and want to do some unrelated AI news? This is probably going to blow your mind as a car owner.
Okay.
Or not. I would just like...
Don't tell me they're going to be monitoring my driving so that it can inform my insurance how much they should be charging me.
Not yet, but...
They offered that to me on my last insurance contract, and I was like, I will not be installing that app. Thank you.
You do know that I think there's an insurance company in Canada where you can give them health bio, like biometric data on a monthly basis, and they use that to determine your premiums.
Driving?
No, just like for health. Like you wear a Fitbit.
Yeah.
And you send them your data and you agree to this under the idea that if you stay healthy, your premiums are going to be low. It's crazy. Like, you know what you're getting into. It's not like they're just finding your data in your Strava account and they look at me like, Marcello's not running. Let's increase his race.
Oh, my God.
But it's like they're gamifying the health side of insurance. Like, you can pay less if you are, like, healthier. And they can... But that's... I mean, you just gave me that. You just reminded me of that with your car comment, but I'm sure eventually. No, the main thing I was going to bring up is that The Economist just released an article titled, Are Touchscreens in Cars Dangerous? And I just found it funny. It's like, we're asking this question now.
This is so funny too, because I often think about, I mean, we're of the age where, like, it was totally fine using your phone in your car.
Yeah.
I know you haven't, because you've been in the city most of the time, you're driving, you probably haven't driven as much as I have in your working life, but I remember having phone calls, like holding my phone, having like full out phone calls, and there was nothing wrong with that. And now, you know, you've got the screen, and I'm like, there's so much going on the screens too that I often have been like, this is just as bad. Like, I'm looking at this operating system. And
it's just as bad. And it's just like, it's so funny how slow moving that stuff is, because it's like we committed to putting that in cars. There weren't really many questions asked, but I think that we've all felt it. Like, we felt that this was a bad idea to begin with.
We just need it though. Honestly, we need it.
We need touchscreens.
I'm very pro touchscreens in cars, because we need it.
Really?
Because of maps. I mean, mainly just because of maps, to be honest.
Maps make sense. I do get that. It's a necessary evil. But
I had in Italy, I had a the worst possible car you could imagine renting for Italian roads. But I had no option because I had my mother-in-law with us and the two kids and everyone's bag. So I had a North American large SUV. So like an SUV bigger than what I drive here. And it was a Volvo XC90. And first of all, love the car, but it had such a cool feature. It had the big tablet, but once you hit start on the map, it actually transferred that information to your HUD. So where your speedometer was. And I'd never seen that feature before.
It's cool.
And I was like, this is awesome because like I don't actually have to look away too much. It's in an area that I would be looking at anyways if I was monitoring my speed or whatever. And it had two different views. So it had like a close view on the heads up display, and then it had the map view on the tablet still. So if you had it, you know, if you were like second guessing something, you had two different angles. It was amazing. It was so awesome. And the car was great, but it was so difficult to drive in the country.
Yeah, I imagine like the small corners, tiny streets.
I gotta show you.
Where do you even park something like that?
Did I show you the tunnel that I had to go through for our accommodation?
Yeah. I don't even know how a car like that made it through.
Luckily, it has sensors literally everywhere, and it has a 360-degree camera. I was moving, adjusting by like an inch at a time to turn and get my car straight through this tunnel. And the whole time, I wasn't even looking outside the car. I was literally just looking at the 360 camera and all the sensors to see like how far away I was. But if we didn't have... For reference, I had to turn into that. From that road, it's a right angle. And the sensors were amazing. I had to rely completely on the sensors and the 360 camera. It was wild.
Which you need a screen for. So
I honestly don't think if I didn't have those sensors and the camera angles, I don't think I could have gotten into that turn.
Yeah.
Done that turn. All right.
No, and that's where things have gone. Like all of the sensors, Waymo as well. Like the only reason Waymo is excelling is because its sensors blow the computer vision models like out of the water with LiDAR. Yeah.
Dude, this car was so, so nice. It's a 7-seater.
How many seats?
It's a beast. It was amazing. All right, cool.
All right.
That's it.
Well, I got more, but I'll save it for next week. Maybe we'll cover out the death of humanities and... A guy named Rob Hopkins, which I can't wait to tell you about.
Okay, sweet. Looking forward to it. All right.
Hex codes in my soul, dark and deep. Interface leak, promises to keep. Ain't no sleep, go so steep. Long walks help me, that's my leap. Sketch, searching, no remorse. Usability, of course. Another walking.